there is a continues to be a little bit of apprehension in the IT community, especially among contractors, about the interaction with 18F. That's the initiative at the General Services Administration that the Digital Service Office will work with. But right before,
I see that as very complimentary. Actually, I could imagine it's confusing as I read the articles about it, but I think it's pretty coherent. Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, my suggestion was just going to be that Lena Trudeau, right before she left 18F, addressed a lot of those concerns, and the portrayal that I got from her was that there was still going to be plenty of room for the industry community to provide innovation and direct innovation, and that 18F, and now it appears the Digital Service Office, will be more arbiters to help direct that innovation to the agencies that can use it and to help the agencies understand how they can use, as you said, the acquisition structures that are in place to help them get this innovation to the places where it's really needed. Am I reading that right, do you think?
Oh, well, let's put this into perspective, first of all. The $80 billion IT spend on the federal government is obviously heavily reliant upon private sector technologies and innovations and conversations that are held every single day at all levels of government in every corner of the United States. What you're seeing here is strengthening the capacity for some of these high-priority projects that allow for a new set of eyes, a fresher set of eyes to collaborate with the agencies who want to get the problem solved and might feel like their historical options to get that kind of expertise were limited. So this is really a very helpful addition to the portfolio of tools to help modernize the government. So if you're a community member listening to the show and you're curious about how this will affect your company, if you provide services to the government, will this be competitive or helpful, I would feel very confident that this is helpful to strengthening the capacity of the public sector to work better with achieving the agency's mission, incorporating both existing technologies, newer technologies from inside the government, from outside the government. And that's just a good thing for those who believe we need to close this technology and innovation gap. And I'm just proud that this team is hitting the ground running.
The blog post in which Stephen and Todd and Beth introduced this says digital service hires will have talent and expertise in a variety of disciplines, including procurement, human resources, and finance. That's a pretty broad spectrum. Do you sense that that is a good fit for something that's providing this, or are there other places where they'll want to draw from in addition to just having all that talent in-house?
Oh, well, let me be very clear. What they're describing there is sort of the reality that we face when we put these pieces and parts together. And I can tell you back in the first term, as an example, when we were staffing up for projects that were the predecessors to some of the Presidential Innovation Fellowship activities, whether it be the Entrepreneurship Pathway Initiative at the USCIS or the Innovation Pathway at the FDA, which we called Entrepreneurs in Residence. Francis, that was an HR play. We had to get real smart about how the agencies could bring on talent. And we learned that there were authorities that we'd never heard of that would allow us to bring expertise that was necessary easier and more efficiently than some of the traditional, you know, the famous pictures of the 2-mile-long regulatory rope of all the things you have to do to hire someone. So we learn HR was an important skill because there's authorities on the books that perhaps may not be fully understood by people. We saw the same with technology acquisitions. And so I think the guiding principles for the technology FAR, as an example, encapsulate sort of a fresher set of eyes thinking about how those existing kind of procurement rules should operate. So you have to have a sort of a fresher look at those rules. So you need capacity in this organization to be smart about the right acquisition vehicle to meet the needs of the problem they're trying to solve. And then last but not least, obviously, you want technologists to understand how to incorporate some of the newer approaches in cloud-based tools so that they can be part of the mix. What you don't want to have happen is an agency that presupposes a technical solution, an HR solution, a procurement methodology, absent a fuller view of all that was available to them to be able to meet their objectives. And I hear in the common the language around what this organization is going to do is to really provide that supplemental support to the agency leadership to making sure they've got all the best choices in front of them and the best decisions that they can make.
Anish Chopra is co-founder and executive vice president of Hunch Analytics and former chief technology officer of the United States. My media organization, Anish, and others use this as an opportunity to, the headline that we had on this story, OMB wants healthcare.gov lessons to endure in new digital service office. I wonder if that's a fair representation in your mind to attach it to the situation with healthcare.gov when it appears the planning for this has been in the works for a lot longer.
Well, I would say that the planning for the digital services office largely happened in the wake of healthcare.gov. I don't personally have a recollection in the first term where we envisioned a specific office of the government dedicated to this activity. We were doing it ad hoc, as I was describing for some of those earlier case studies. I think the poignancy and the tragedy of the moment really shook the system a little and suggested that new organizational approaches were necessary. These ad hoc, one-off initiatives were not going to cut it in order to make sure that these kinds of problems don't happen. So I think it's very fair to say that healthcare.gov really shined light on the need for this kind of capacity building in areas that are important to the country. So while a lot of the individual ideas and components can trace back to some of the work we were laying the foundation for in the first term, I absolutely believe it was accurate to say that this idea of an office, capacity in the office to do this work in a more formalized way, clearly happened in the second term, and I presume it happened shortly after the challenging launch.
Jason reports that the office will consist of about 25 experts brought in on 2 to 4 year term appointments to help agencies plan, improve, and fix IT programs. One of the issues that came up in the healthcare.gov situation was the idea, not necessarily applicable to that particular project, but to IT projects in government in general, that political appointees are transitional and they're on a 2 to 4 year basis and not necessarily there to see a project through to its entire implementation. Do you worry that that may be the case here and that these experts will be transitioning in a short enough time period that they might not be able to effectively see a program through to completion? Or is that not as important for the kind of SWAT team mentality that you alluded to earlier, Anish?
Well, you know, in fact, the way you framed the question almost indicates the definition of the problem. If you default to the notion that we need 10-year projects, that we need 8-year modernization programs, that we have to have these big bang moments. If that's the worldview, I think that's the wrong worldview. I think a lot of this has to do with incremental, agile approaches to bring functionality up. And if you embrace more of a modular design to bring functionality up, you shouldn't have to have a big bang moment. And I'll just give you an example. We're watching this play in, you know, coming out right now. When you look at the VA and the scheduling challenge, you know, it's a big bang 9-year project, 2000 to 2009, and not a single line of working code on the scheduling project that was shut down during the performance review led by then CIO Roger Baker. That mentality of a 9-year project, no line of code, that doesn't serve anybody. They instead opened up the interfaces, so Vista's core instance is available for the public to plug their off-the-shelf solutions in, and in less than a year, for instance, they had 3 viable products demonstrate that they can successfully facilitate a patient self-scheduling transaction. So that took a year using the challenge.gov structure and the open interfaces from the VA system. And so if you have the mindset that you can take more of a modular approach to bringing functionality that's relevant to the services constituency that we're trying to improve upon, then you don't necessarily have to rely on these 7-year, 10-year multi-billion dollar projects. You break them into more sizable chunks and you can deliver pretty impressive functionality. So no, I actually think that, to me, the political appointee issue has a lot more to do with the problem of procurement and the fact that you have to separate out people who are there on political positions to sort of keep away from all these procurement choices, because you don't want to have any presumption of impropriety on who gets picked for what product. But then you lose out on some of that talent. And so you have this frustration where you want to achieve a policy objective and then you hand it off to folks who have to cordon off anybody to provide input to the project going forward until vendors are picked and so forth. And that's just the wrong road. That's the, you could see all the tragedies that have been lined up over the years. So this capacity building inside the organization that can dig in and give advice on specific projects that's non-politicized sounds like a phenomenally good service to be made available.
This, the story that you tell about success in agile development, certainly not the only one. We've documented a number of them on this program and on this radio station. Why do you think government leaders are still trying to convince other government leaders that agile development or building in chunks or whatever you want to call it is the desired method most of the time, at least, rather than having that being taken for granted in 2014, Anish?
Well, it's a reality of history. I mean, if you look at how people have been trained in project management, you know, all of the lessons learned have been, look, do the requirements analysis. Ensure you've got a thoughtful approach to project planning. It's that standard waterfall diagram that's been injected into the brain of so many folks who've been managing projects over the years. This is a new model, this concept of an agile approach or a lean government startup approach. And so you almost have to, you know, it's like going to the gym, Francis, and working on a new set of muscles that you hadn't been working out on all that while. So we're having to do that as a country. We're trying to work out new muscles in the gym to think differently about how we can go about solving a problem. I think I shared with you the story. Immigration, when we came in the door in 2009, was in the middle of a $1 billion modernization project. And I don't remember exactly the date, the anticipation of a new service or feature to be made available to the service recipients, what the date was scheduled for that to happen. Yet the president comes out of a meeting with Senator John McCain, among others, and says, I want something done in 90 days. And so inside USCIS, their best and brightest and a few of us from the White House joined at the hip and said, what can we do? And you kind of see a brand new service feature available to the folks that actually have to interact with the agency. And it went live in 90 days. And I don't know, from the survey results, it looked like it was the best performing government website for Hispanic audiences, which is, you sort of share that story to the public. I'm like, what? The USCIS has the highest customer satisfaction rating for Hispanics? It was sort of an eye-opener when you sort of see. And that was a 90-day falling within this billion-dollar modernization program. It's just the nature of culture and history. We just got to work through that, Francis.
The administration has about 2.5 years left. What do you think we can expect to see in that time period, in addition to execution of the Digital Service Office, to institutionalize it so that the next administration, regardless of party and regardless of who the leader is, sees the value of it and wants to continue it and doesn't just do so because, well, it's embedded and we have to and because we can't really avoid it? How do you institutionalize the value, Anish?
Well, I would just begin by saying how much I'm appreciative of the bipartisan support for much of this approach. I mean, if you recall, even when President Obama was Senator Obama, it was Obama Coburn that promoted the open data work that had to go with USAspending.gov. So it had bipartisan roots in many ways from its origin. And if you diagnose each and every one of these recommendations, I read an article, even Congressman Daryl Issa said very favorable things about the digital service. So my hope, Francis, is that the tradition of bipartisanship around smarter government holds, and that, you know, a lot of the interactions that I recall having with the Hill were much more to do with substance and thoughtfulness about execution than it was an ideological worldview that said this is terrible or that's terrible, you can't do that, bigger government, smaller government. Those issues didn't show up when we interacted with the Hill. And so my general point of view is you focus mostly on execution and making sure that you're going to deliver results to the American people. And if you do so in an open and collaborative manner, it will naturally be the case that your successor will carry the ball and run with it. And I told you, Francis, that was my personal history, right, with Virginia. When I was Virginia's Secretary of Technology, it was a position created by a Republican governor, Governor Gilmore, and Mark Warner, who succeeded him, had a lot to say in opposition to Gilmore, but not only built upon but strengthened that concept of a Secretary of Technology, which carried through to the Kaine years, which carried through to the McDonnell years. So you have Republicans and Democrats, at least in my worldview, coming together on strengthening this capacity in the public sector. So my whole confidence is that this will carry forward for administrations to come.